Well, g'day everybody and welcome back to the Hardball Gets AFL show. Today on the show, Isaac Rankine made his debut. We talk about the state of the game, people turning on Clarko, a bit of Geelong, and the latest fixtures that were released too. If you haven't subscribed to the podcast, please do that. Leave a rating and leave a review. All right, let's get stuck in. The Hardball Gets AFL show. My name's Nick Rinn, joined by Zave Ellis. G'day, mate. What's happening?
Great to be here, mate. Not much is happening, to be honest. The weather's pretty ordinary, and I'm
in the home of football.
I'm at home. Yeah, well, here they all come. Here they all come to Perth, you beauty.
Just laying out the red carpet for them, mate, to swing in and out.
It's funny, I keep swearing. If Geelong players piss me off anymore, I will get caught in their hub and they will be kicked out of Perth.
You've been getting a bit of feedback, have you?
No. I've got actually a couple of good mates who coach at Collingwood who keep putting in grog orders. They want me to drop over boxes of beer.
So you've just become like your Dan Murphy's delivery man.
I ain't driving the Joondalup up. I'll give you the tip.
What's been the most common request?
No, beers.
Yeah. Just drop off export, mate. Give them a taste of the local product.
Yeah, well, one, Scotty Selwood, who obviously spent a fair bit of time here, so I can't bluff him with the cheap stuff either. But actually, I don't even know if I could drop beer off there. I don't know whether they...
Probably have to be sterilised and everything else.
Yeah, whether I can get close enough.
So that is the funny thing, right? So Geelong and Collingwood, Fremantle and West Coast, obviously, they're all in WA at the moment. They're, you know, we talked about the ability of people to come and get crowds and everything else, but they're... Their lockdown, like their hub over here, is way more intense than what people are getting in Queensland and New South Wales.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like there's literally zones at some of the grounds they're going to train at are shared grounds. There's zones that are quarantine zones that get deep cleaned like before and after every session. Can't leave the room, can't leave the hotel room, like stuck in resorts and like literally stuck in, can't even go out and get a coffee.
I did hear some complaints today on the radio about like actual Western Australians who can't get back into WA.
Yep.
But the footballers' wives have just jumped on the plane and then they're off quarantining on their own like family property. So
the ones that came over who had family over here.
Yeah, it's like Stanley's. So his wife's a Perth girl, Menegola's, obviously Perth, and Harry Taylor. So those, but like they can get in, but then those people ringing up who were stranded at the border.
Yeah, really.
From Adelaide, from South Australia to WA. Yeah, crazy.
It's great. Yeah, but it was only because everyone else's wives and kids got a no go from the government, didn't they? It was just the ones who have a local, probably who had a place they could isolate locally. Yeah, a lot of the other players wanted to bring their wives and children, and I think they still have pending applications. But they've basically been told.
I didn't follow it.
Yeah, no, it was only the ones with a local connection.
Right. All I know, there's a lot that were pissed off at the end.
Which is like
the actual West Australians. It was a big song and dance today on radio, which you sort of understand a little bit, I guess.
Well, it is. Yeah, we've got trying to get my wife and daughter over to Queensland to see my mum around her birthday. And we can't go because we haven't been ticked off to come back. Sending the application and it's about a 4-day. It said, like, you'll have an approval in 4 days, and then we checked the next day. It was like, you'll have an approval in 2 weeks, within 2 weeks.
Really? What's
like, it's crazy.
Then it'll be the 14 days this way, wouldn't it?
You'd have to isolate 14 days coming back in, yeah. But you got it, like, that's a problem with leaving. Like, you can't be guaranteed you're going to come back in. Queensland's fine. Borders open.
Yeah, okay.
So you can get into Queensland. You can get into New South Wales. You can get in most places now. Just coming back to WA is a... You have to have a
no go.
You have to be ticked off. Otherwise, who knows? You come back and hit the border, and they send you away again. It's pretty hectic. It's still pretty hectic.
Mate, my family's off to Broome. It was meant to be on Wednesday, so I was looking forward to having a few people at my joint Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, Monday night. Virgin are like, oh yeah, thanks for your money, guys. Your flight's now on Friday. Just changed it. Two days.
This is the world we're living in at the moment.
Here's your holiday. You're now Friday to Wednesday as opposed to Wednesday to Monday. I was like, how do you do that?
That's the classic Jetstar move, isn't it? Like, you buy a $100 Jetstar flight and then rock up. They're like, oh, no, we changed it to next week. And
you imagine what Broome will be like, though. Broome will be like, oh, no, our accommodation's full. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
You're booked for those days. Yeah, it's going to be a shit show.
Oh, well, joy. So, footy. I was so pleased. I was sitting there Saturday as the text started coming through. The first goal was something. The second goal, arguably even better. And then the third, just a brilliant reading of play. Isaac Rankine, did I not call this for 2 years?
You did call for 2 years. Now, come on, one hot day doesn't make a summer, but you're right. You saw it.
It doesn't happen often.
All right. You got Matt Rowell, you got Rankine. Who's going to have the better career?
I'd say Rowell will, when you line him up at the end, Rowell would have been he'll have a longer list of accolades, but it's who would you rather watch? It will be Rankine. Rankine puts bums on seats.
Yeah, so it'll be maybe a Sam Mitchell v. Andrew McLeod or something.
Well, yeah, so even Sam Mitchell versus Sirioli in that same side, who do you go to watch when you look back at the end
Sam Mitchell.
You got to watch Sam Mitchell over Sirioli.
Mate, he was tough, clean. Yeah, shit, mate. Sam Mitchell was – those ground balls that he never fumbled,
yeah.
He never looked up. It's so tough and just – that's football. That
look at
is,
this, the man who gets his joys on the fundamentals.
Oh,
the big fundamentals, Xavier Ellis.
What about his kicking?
Yeah, it was great, but there were moments – Sirioli give you a moment every game or every second game where you just go, wow, how did that happen? That's what I like going football for.
Well, you're right. You like it short and sweet. I'm more of a
I'm a 16-minute quarter, man. You're a 20-minute quarter plus time on.
That's it. And how are those 16-minute quarters going for you?
Oh, God, yeah, I'm over them. I'm over them pretty quickly. But, Louis, I was stoked. I fully believed he was going to kick that set shot. This is the asterisk on his game, right? So,
yeah.
And he gets a few of the – he gets plenty of credits because it was his first game in the AFL and he kind of was their most damaging forward. But he had two set shots in the dying minutes or final quarter. One of them, which I don't even know what the free kick was. The umpire just decided to give him a free kick over the boundary. So I missed that from a tight angle. And then the second one was a fundamentals, I suppose. It was a pretty regulation set shot from, 35-40 and just pushed it wide. And that, I think, it was either to, put him – out of reach or put him two goals up or put him ahead. I can't remember quite which it was, but it could have iced the game. And that's a small asterisk, but that's only if you want to spoil the fun and you actually think the Gold Coast can play finals here.
If he did nothing other than that first kick, first goal, you would have seen almost enough to go, okay, that's pretty good. But then I loved how he came crashing down from the highs of all highs with his second kick of AFL football.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Turnover, goal, straight back over his head, trying to switch one inside. I mean, the Gold Coast, I picked Melbourne on Saturday night, but
yeah.
I mean, again, Gold Coast leave that game. Yeah, they get the 4 points, but Stewie Jew would just be slightly aroused by what's happening up there at the moment.
Absolutely. You have, and it was Rankine, and Noah Anderson played a hell of a game as well. Just in the absence of Matt Rowell, he's kind of gone under the radar, Anderson, but there's a reason they were 1 and 2 and then daylight in the draft. He's got a hell of a lot of talent himself.
Well, I wrote that in your paper just last week saying he's been in the back seat, but he's been in the back seat of something we haven't seen for 10 years in terms of Rowell's.
But
the back seat doesn't mean he's in the back seat of a bus. He's literally been pretty good himself. He's only been a couple of seats behind Rowell. And I think now, regardless of whether he likes it or doesn't like it, I think that naturally people will go, okay, then who was the number two draft pick? And it's going to be tough for him because I do think Gold Coast will flatten out a little bit at some stage. But for Stewie Jew and those coaches and Mark Evans up there, all they needed to keep that team together was some bright lights.
Yep.
And they've landed those bright lights. Now, there's no chance in the world that there's going to be talk of any of those players going anywhere. They are there now. There's absolutely no chance of anything other than Gold Coast making a move on someone big to bring in someone bigger. That's the only way it's going
to
happen.
There's a weight of numbers now, isn't there? It used to be good kids in their first or second year and then no one and then Gaz.
Yeah.
And now it's good kids in their first and second year, and then like a Witz and a Swallow, like solid guys in the middle of their careers, middle of their careers, and it's a much more well-rounded side. And they probably figured out a couple of things. They were in demountables for the first few years, which I think they fixed that up pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah. But even like Jack Martin, they lost him for nothing.
Yeah.
No one's even questioned that. And Jack Martin's been playing really good football at Carlton. Like, that's a shocking trade move by the Gold Coast, essentially. But because there's been so many positives, no one's going to be like, well, you lost Jack Martin for nothing. They're like, who gives a shit?
And it's going to come back to be like, you know, that was the moment they made their stand. They weren't just going to accept peanuts, so they gave him away for nothing.
100%. 100%.
You're not going to bend us over here. Have him. What?
That's two ways to look at it. If the Gold Coast was shit this year, it would have been like the writing was on the wall. You could tell, what a ridiculous trade. But now they're going, well, it's like, oh, that was the stand Gold Coast had to make.
Yeah.
They turned the club around.
The narrative's a funny thing. You want to control it, don't you?
100%.
And you got the Rising Star nod. We're recording this on a Monday evening. You got the Rising Star nod. How's that? You lose the best young player in the comp, replace him with a bloke who gets a Rising Star nod first up. That's like three of the first five. How many rounds have we done? Six?
Who got three of the first Young six. Got one at Freo.
Nah, he didn't get one. Sam Sturt got one at Freo.
Young got one a couple of weeks ago, didn't he?
Nah, he had it. He played well. I think it was like Connor Butterick or no, someone else had a massive game.
Right, okay.
I mean, I'll find this out.
I don't know.
You pat out for a second while I said it's a Rising Stars.
Mate, you need to get on your Google and find that because I'm on my phone for Zoom. But I thought Hayden Young collected a Rising Star like round three, but I could be wrong.
Oh, no, yeah. He played a pretty good game the same round that Tom Green went nuts.
That's right. Yeah.
Curtis Taylor, yeah, Tom Green, Butterick, Raoul, Sam Sturt, and now Rankine.
Yeah. Okay. I stand corrected. And Young's obviously done his syndesmosis, so he won't be seen probably again till.
Yeah, rough one, isn't it?
Maybe the end of the year.
Well, yeah, it's a tight year. You can't really call anything. And it looks like. So that was good enough. I don't want to transition away from Isaac Rankine yet. but it's a good enough
transition. You've got to leave him.
I've got to leave him. Point's been made. Everyone's jumping on the bandwagon, obviously. I've got a bit of that knew them before they were famous vibe about me today. Just
yes.
Like, come on, everyone.
Yeah, you do.
Please, come on, everybody.
You're like that, the music manager who found the Beatles when they were in a band at university or
really?
Something.
It was a really deep scout from number three in the draft.
Yeah, I was going to say, until we look at his draft potential, and he was either two or three. It was a toss of the coin.
Been
and
on
he
him
went
from
three.
The start, you know. It was the days where nobody believed in him enough to take him in the first two picks.
Absolutely.
So today we got the round eight fixture. What we learned out of that is Monday night footy is pretty much a given, I would say, for the rest of the year. Freo get a Monday night game against Geelong. It's their first standalone game in like 4 or 5 years, I think, where they're the only team playing.
You reckon they get 30 to that? No dramas?
Yeah. Monday night's a weird one. But 30. Say so. You'd expect 30 if I'd it was so. Like people will see it. People who would otherwise – well, people see it as a good opportunity to go because a lot of people who regularly go maybe wouldn't. Because they'll have
we've been starved of it. And potentially you might miss out on going to the Derby as well. You might be not that, that would have been 60.
Yeah.
Now it's back to 30. So there's going to be 30,000 that would have gone. So Monday night footy, I love it. I mean, I'm an NFL fan. So Monday night footy over there is ginormous.
Yeah.
And I think more games, more the merrier.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. Thursday to Monday, keep the spread. Like, why not? Footy every night, let's do it.
There shouldn't be a game that plays over each other anymore.
Yeah, I think even one of the first weeks of the revamp fixture where there were two teams overlapping on a Saturday for no reason, that was a curious one. I think they've pretty much sorted it now so that I think Saturday – Saturday night's been different the last couple, but there's not too many at the same time.
But Saturday even like night, Saturday nights, there was an hour and a half difference between the two games on the weekend.
It's enough.
I like the Sunday night game. I'm more than happy for more Sunday night games as well.
Yeah, Sunday night works. So we're going to see Monday night. We think sort of the mail is they're going to try and basically cram an extra round in somewhere. So everyone playing off short breaks.
Yeah.
I don't know how they do it. They probably don't know how they do it either.
And what's the purpose?
Just to get, I think they're still keen to get the grand final away late October instead of early November. For what reason, I don't know, because the World Cup's not coming anymore.
There's not going to be football in Victoria for a long period of time. So, like, yeah. either you put your sword down and nominate where the grand final is going to be then and go from there, or we, slow play it, and who knows, you might have it at the MCG at some stage. But at the moment, what's the point of rushing it? It ain't going back to Melbourne.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm not exactly sure why, but they're trying to cram an extra one in. At the moment, I thought it would get away from that October 24 just because there'll be a slate of games, or at least one that they have to play at the end, which is that Melbourne, Melbourne Essendon one. But it looks like they're going to try and cram them all in somehow.
With Geelong go back to Melbourne after, maybe 3 or 4 weeks over here, then they're going to have to, then they go into the system. But no one's having Victorians anymore.
Yeah.
So then what's going to happen?
Like, how do they get out?
There's no way for them to get home at the moment because West Coast aren't going to go play in a Victorian hub.
No.
That won't happen.
Yeah, no one's going into Victoria.
So for the Victorians to leave after they reckon they're going to have that catch up with their families, they're going to have to go hide for 2 weeks anyway. And like, that might be a serious hide.
Yeah.
I don't reckon if Victorian clubs were leaving this weekend into WA, no way it'd be the same situation as it was those clubs coming from Sydney.
Yeah, true. Yeah, there's been a couple. There was even a family there who were trying to get back. The rules changed halfway and they got sent back again. Went over for a funeral.
See ya.
Yeah, but that's the talk is now that they're going to get most of the families out of Victoria into like another hub, and then they go from the Perth hub to another hub, and then who knows after that?
That's crazy.
Yeah,
it's almost getting too confused, like too much. You know what I mean? Like, they need to make a couple of like steadfast decisions, and I know you can't with the floating fixtures, but in terms of there's going to be a period where the players go, nah, no more. I ain't doing 10 weeks away from my family.
Yeah, yeah. I think they're going to try. They'll try to move the families around to keep the season alive. They're trying to get as many people out of Victoria and shuffled around to different hubs as they can, I think.
Yeah, which is good in theory, but they've all got houses.
It's a nightmare.
And
yeah.
Some have got farms and all that sort of stuff. And,
yeah.
Who's
looking after Hawks farm?
Anyway.
Who's looking after Hawks farm?
Oh, geez, it runs itself, mate. don't all farms do that? Don't they eat grass? I don't know.
Vic Country stalwart David Ellis with a firm grasp on farming. Didn't see you in that Dairy Country ad where they're kicking the ball. Was that Cunnington? Back when he had hair.
Did you know Ben Cunnington and Tom Hawkins grew up in and around a dairy farm?
Yeah, I've heard. I've heard this.
That ad on a Brownlow night, I reckon it was played 60 times. I reckon it might have been 2014 Brownlow night. Oh,
I'm going to bet
it was.
Cunnington's the only dairy farmer in Australia with hair plugs.
Yeah. Farmer wants a wife coming back. I mean, if you're down and desperate, you've got to fill that head.
That's true. So beyond the fixture, there's been talk. It happens every year, but this year's probably it's taken on another life, which is the state of the game argument. Different people having cracks at it at different times. Where do you sit on it?
It just feels like the majority of games, and maybe it is the dew and maybe there has been some rain, it just feels like most games are played in the wet. You know those wet condition games where no one can string 3 or 4 clean disposals together? Now, my gripe, and I was on it all last year, I just think the skills are going backwards in AFL football.
Yeah.
Do any teams kick the ball like, Geelong did in their prime time, Hawthorn did. Hawthorn
did in their prime. West Coast 2018 looked around there, but they've gone backwards.
They still weren't at that level. But, I just think that the coaching and stuff, they go, Dimmer and Horse had a Barney over who was putting plays behind the ball.
Yeah, how was that?
Wouldn't have mattered 5 years ago.
Yeah,
would have diced and sliced you to pieces.
Yeah.
I just think the skill level is shit outs, and I think that's contributing. Don't even know, the coaches are playing a big part with some of their defensive strategies, but I just think the skills are absolutely shit outs.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of factors to that, right? One's been on the radar of the AFL for years, which is like an erosion of solid fundamental coaching at a junior level.
Yeah.
So the kids are never a good kick, never become a good kick because If you don't learn it at the start, it's hard to learn to become a good kick, right? And that's something they've identified it. Like going back to when I was doing draft reporting, you know, 5-6 years, it was like a known issue, and they'd already been working on it for a while then. But there's obviously no answer,
mate. Well, I don't know where Young sat in the draft in terms of whether he was drafted higher than what he should have been or not. But the more and more, if you spot a kid that can kick,
just get him.
Yeah. That automatically puts him up a rung or two, because you watch him play at the moment, and first year you go, oh, thank Christ, he's going to be damaging off half back.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you look at a lot of players that are playing these days, you're like, mate, they're going at like 50% by foot.
Yeah.
It is atrocious. Like, that's not coaching. That's just get off your fortnight, get off your top knots in your bloody hair ties.
Oh, here he comes.
And bloody go outside. I'd never see a kid kicking footies in the street.
We used to kick through
fence gate, like driveway fences, all that sort of stuff all night. We nearly got hit by cars every night, hundreds of them. But like, you never see it. And then they come in and it's not the kids. But the kicking and stuff, I just think that's probably been the most noticeable, which makes you think it just looks like it's in wet weather all the time, because they can't string together 4 or 5 attacking kicks.
Yeah, it's part of that you think to sort of follow the leader. Like Richmond won a flag by just getting the ball forward at every opportunity. It doesn't matter how you do it. They obviously had Dusty chopping through the middle and hitting every target he wants to. But generally it's just this surge mentality. You get it forward and run onto it, because a stoppage in the forward 50 is better than a stoppage in midfield. Like, you reckon there's any of that that's crept in this season? Everybody trying to adopt the same thing?
Yeah, I wonder how much at training they do actual genuine kicking drills as opposed to surge, knock on, hit on, play on drills. I don't know, it'd be interesting. But, yeah. And maybe that's just me being who loves watching pretty genuine, pure football. Like, I still love seeing a delicious kick over 55. That's like the best part of the game for me. It's just that, watching some old vision of, the Hawks and the Cats who we mentioned, and even Collingwood with Pendlebury and those guys back in the day, the pinpoint accuracy, you couldn't defend it. Whereas now I think defenders can be pretty loose and just expect it to be cocked up at some stage.
Yeah. I wonder if it surges, because you go back and watch old games and no one could actually hit a target, really. They were just kicked in the area of a big full forward, basically. I don't know if we talked about this earlier in the year, but I watched the 89 grand final, which everyone talks up. Like, and it's just a blood sport. Like, everyone's just trying to kill each other. And there's only one passage of play where Johnny Platton gets it in the middle and just laces out Jason Dunstall. And I'm like, that's the only thing that resembles like what I thought the elite, like the top of the was football was. Like, apart from that, it was just everybody trying to kill each other.
The scoring was higher, but maybe that was just because people lost one-on-one battles more often.
Yeah, well, one bloke got a free kick in the middle, and then like they mucked around with the ball forever, and he was basically there for like a minute and a half and still kicked it to a one-on-one in the forward 50. Like, that doesn't.
Yeah.
There is no chance in the hell that would happen these days. One
thing I did think on the scoring at the moment, the 16-minute quarters, it seems like the scoring's like really low. But I did a little bit of math on a few of the games over the weekend, and if you added 20% to the scoreline, it sat pretty even with what sort of stuff we expected last year. You know, it obviously wasn't a high scoring season last year, but this year is not one out of the hat in terms of poor scoring. There's obviously shit games that have been going on.
Hawthorn
was bad. Richmond was horrible.
Sydney, Richmond, yeah.
But the other ones, the scoring seemed to be pretty much on par with last year.
Well, that's where I look at it. So from the round just gone, the ones where I saw the majority of the game, it was working Thursday, Friday, was the Fremantle game, which was exciting because they came back for 40 points down, you know, they just got 10 at the end. And then the Carlton game where they kicked 100, like, you know, they raised the bat, which is so. From the games that I actually sat down and got a bit of time to watch, and Gold Coast where Rankine was going crazy, it was just like it was. Yeah, I'd say the game's going all right. Like, but then I don't sit down and watch by choice like terrible games of football anymore.
Yeah, it's funny. The viewership's through the roof. It's up. It's up 10-15%.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So like people are sitting and watching it regardless. But so for example, you add 20% on a Carlton score, they've scored 120 points.
Yeah. Which is like, he's a very good day. Like how many? I wonder how many times we saw that last year.
No, maybe there was something like they hadn't scored 100 points in like 50 games or something.
Oh, Carlton, yeah. Well, Carlton specifically.
But for Carlton to do it, it's crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy. And sitting in the top eight. But it's not that – no form counts this year, so who knows what the hell's going to happen.
Who knows?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Is there – like these arguments go round and round. There's no real fix, is there? Like – oh, the way
no,
I see
no,
it,
no,
it caught fire, and the whole time it did, I was sitting there thinking, geez, this is the least of our problems. Like, we got people everywhere.
I think we need to be somewhat. I know I'm a person that does it. Like, maybe I need to look for more of the positives out of the situation. It's shining a light on a pretty shit time. So,
maybe
I need to sit back and.
That's probably people get a lot of joy out of complaining about footy. Like it's part of loving footy is just like having it full on win. So maybe that's the sign that footy's in a better place than we all think. The fact that we're all arguing about how poor the game is.
We're all bitching about it. It's probably a good point. I think maybe we just smile and every last year there was two or three shit games around. This year there's two or three. Like, maybe we just get used to that there's going to be some ordinary games and move on.
Someone did raise a good point, with Clarko talking about how bad the game was. It's like, well, he's had to watch all the Hawthorn games.
Yeah, he's sitting through it, mate. They are pretty ordinary at the moment. And I think that time's almost done with swapping the first round draft picks for...
They got a draft, yeah.
Yeah, draft. And Jordan Lewis was pretty vocal today. And I don't know whether they just... took a quote out of it, a long piece that said, I don't know whether Clarko's got the 5 years for a rebuild in terms of Sam Mitchell sitting there. But I didn't hear the SEN commentary behind it. So maybe it was a 15-minute conversation. That's what they grabbed. But it would
They're
be
starting
tiring
to
start again. 5 years of rebuild. Mm. It's a long time. It's a long, long time.
Would he, knowing Clarko, would he ever – I mean, when's his contract up? I can't remember when his contract's up, but would he ever start looking elsewhere, you reckon? No, because we free frog marched old mate out.
I don't reckon he'd do it. I reckon he'd have a year off footy or something before he'd do anything else. But, like, even you look at it and go, do they trade Tom Mitchell, as silly as it sounds?
Just load up and do a full rebuild?
Well, I mean, they've got Warple, who is now not getting a kick, who won their best and fairest last year. Similar mold to Tom Mitchell. Is he got value? Like, they've got to start to try and land that the Luke Hodge trade. Trade someone to try and get someone in.
But you've got a Brownlow medalist. Like, that's you don't trade a Brownlow medalist, right?
Yeah, well, the raps on Trent Crowe and Luke McFarlane were pretty bloody high as well. I'm not saying Mitchell. I just picked him because of Warple. The clash at the moment with them, but it might be,
if someone came hard for Sicily,
came really hard for Sicily and offered pick one or something, do you contemplate doing it to try and get a kickstart? Because there's no point in them finishing 6th to 10th. They need to be, 16th to 18th to try and get some fresh blood in there of note.
Yeah.
Trying
to pick Clarko in another polo.
Geez, I tell you what, he'd bloody shake up a few joints if he got there.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to happen anymore, and this is a good switch to this team. But had Ken Hinckley got the arse at Port Adelaide gone to hell, Clarko, though, he did, he was an assistant there, wasn't he?
Yeah, he got given the boot the year they won their grand final. He got sacked the week of, because he took up the Hawthorn role. But, mate, Ken Hinckley, good on him. Like, put his balls on the line essentially by saying, if I don't make the eight, I'm out. I'm war. Don't worry about sacking me. I'm done. I think how good's that? But also the way that those players are playing, I thought GWS was certainties on the weekend.
Yeah.
And when they hit the front in the third quarter or last, and I was like, run away with it, but they're just going to grind this one out. But they actually put their foot in the ground and not only they punched in the next three or four goals, it was bloody good to see.
Yeah, mate, they're playing. I think we're at a stage now where we can say it's not like they look like a good team. It's not a flash in the pan.
Yeah, no, they are.
They look like a good team. They went away and beat GWS. I know you. They took a lot of scalps, the real deal. But they look like the real deal. Well, they're 5-1 sitting on top of the ladder with 160. Yeah. So their percentage is 40. Oh no, someone at Collingwood's just pretty good, but like 40 above the team sitting second.
Yeah, but we're heading to so we're over here in obviously West Coast and Fremantle. So how good is this? We've got 5 or 6 games at home.
Yeah,
Port Adelaide gonna have the same thing.
Yeah,
Port Adelaide are gonna run home games. So I mean they're 1A of anyone in the competition at the moment.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And like when you look at it, oh, I suppose there's still 11 games left, but it's not the amount of games that you would think. Like, you know, we've played this many games, you're like, oh, it's a long road yet. It's like, well, it's not that long a road. It's a long-ish road.
Halfway mark.
Yeah.
So I reckon now you can see, actually, I know we've shit-canned Hawthorn, but they played 5 of the top 6 teams last year already, so they've knocked some hard ones out of the way. And I reckon Port, until what they did to West Coast, who were out of form and knocking over the Giants on the weekend, I reckon they knocked over Sydney, Adelaide, Gold Coast when they were shit out and got punched up by Brisbane. So they've had a bit of a cruisier run. But, I mean, now they're going home. It shouldn't make too much of a difference.
Yeah, but they've still had to do it all on the – like mostly all on the road except for that the showdown, wasn't it? Yeah, the showdown was there.
Yeah, that's round two. Yeah, round two at home.
Yeah, they're looking very nice.
What team – they look nice, but I was on the weekend I thought Geelong was probably the win of the round for me, losing those two players 8 minutes into the game. And Mitch Duncan too, who's one
breaks
of their
up
top
the field,
three
runs,
or four.
Just runs everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, something that kicks it beautifully. For him to be gone and little Narkle out, like they lost a lot of midfield power, but just highlighted the point that we like to make occasionally. Dangerfield is a midfielder.
Yeah. When you clear out the room for him and just get him to get going, like
yes, I saw Lachie Neal starting to chat a little bit. I saw quite a few of them starting to chat a little bit. There wasn't a lot of chat when Danger and Joel and Gaz and those guys, the old
when they started to come.
When those senior players that have won flags and achieved things in the game. There was a hell of a lot of chat left in them. It was they were a little bit quiet.
That's Gaz. Bruce McAvaney made the unfortunate error of saying he was looking a bit wasn't looking too sharp, Gary Ablett. And then he basically, like, every time he touches the ball, it's almost a goal for Geelong, isn't it, at the moment?
In fairness to Bruce, Gary Ablett fumbled a fair bit this year for Gary Ablett.
Yeah.
And on the weekend, just before Bruce said, oh, Ablett's, I was like, geez, he's fumbling everything.
just counting your lucky stars when on commentary.
Is it when you say, like, how would you describe, what's the lasting memory of Buddy Franklin? For me, it'd be him taking a mark, 50 out and just rolling and kicking it.
Yeah.
The lasting memory I have of Gaz in my mind is when he breaks towards goal and then gets the elbows out and arches over the ball and kicks it from 45.
There's a little hunch.
Like that for me, when he's run and he's broken the tackle and then straightens up, that is like my lasting memory of Gary Ablett.
Yeah, making space for himself, settling, just having the time to settle and then just bang.
It's a beautiful kick.
If you haven't watched it, there is the AFL doing some good for their website, shit ass. But they're doing a bit of good stuff on YouTube these days. They did, I think it's like Gary Ablett's 29 best moments, and it's like a 25-minute video. It was some of the best 25 minutes I've spent the last few weeks easily, just sitting there and watching.
So you're busy at the moment?
I'm real busy at the moment. That's my 25-minute window. That's the free time I get to myself in between getting home from work.
And you're watching highlights.
Yeah, just watching highlights of footy. Can't even get a whole game in.
I like it.
Grim time.
I like it. But now those cats, I reckon, made a bit of a stand that maybe in a short season those older players can stand up for longer. And I don't know. I like to put a line through them early in the season, the Cats, because I don't usually think they're much trot. But
yeah.
I reckon this year they put their hand up to be a contender.
Do you still hate Geelong?
Yeah, shit, yeah.
You just never got over it?
Just don't like it. Nah.
Even though
I actually
two of their stalwarts are two of your best mates.
Yeah, no, I do like them. The individuals I like.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'll go to a wedding or a 30th or something and, yeah, hang around like a bad smell and have a great night. But they just carry that bloody waft of being a cat. No one likes cats, mate. It sums up the footy club. No one likes cats. I interviewed Joel Selwood during the week and he was like, deep down, like, I thank the Hawthorn leaders, you know, Hodge and Mitchell and those guys, because no doubt they got the best out of the Cats, you know, senior players.
And
I'm sure Hawthorn players would say, those senior players would say the same, like, if it wasn't for Ablett, Bartel and Selwood and those guys, we wouldn't have got to that level either. Like, it was, you know, the mutual respect.
That is, when you think back at, like, the rivalries of my lifetime and my lifetime with footy, because it wasn't any footy in Queensland, didn't exist while I lived there. That's the one that sticks out, like, of the rivalries. And it's going to be Hawthorn, Geelong. You can add, like, your West Coast, Sydney in there. But those, I don't think those games were ever at the level, at the same level of just, like, precision at, like A1 game they play in heaven football that some of those Hawthorn, Geelong games got to.
But they were all within, what, 8 points or something ridiculous. Yeah. And they all went to one team. Crazy that crazy how Geelong won all of them.
Yeah, except that final.
That was what broke the
2013?
Broke the streak.
Yeah, I remember sitting there thinking the Freo could get the Cats, but didn't know if they could get the Hawks.
Sam Mitchell's game, I know we've spoken about him a couple of times. If you do ever want to watch a midfield performance like I haven't seen too often, that's his best game. It was unbelievable. Yeah, he single-handedly won in that game. Oh, he had 11 or 10 centre clearances. Jeez. Like not clear, like actual out-of-centre bounces.
Out of the middle.
It was something else. Was something else.
That's I think the centre clearances actually this year are becoming even more, like, coming back in vogue even more. It used to be that you could, the clearance wins and losses wasn't as much of a tell of the who won the game. But I think this year the centre clearances is the one to watch in terms of whoever's getting on top of them, well, getting the momentum.
While we're talking about it, who won, O'Brien or Nick Nat? O'Brien had 19 disposals, and 7 marks off the top of my head.
He had had 6 intercepts too, like defensive intercept marks.
Yeah, 4 contested marks. I saw that.
But it is like
Nick smashed the hitouts and had 5 clearances himself.
Yeah, the thing is, like, everything happened as Riley O'Brien called it. Like, not to the level he called it, but he's like, "Oh, I'll have to get him around. I'll get him around the ground," and he did. Like, I think it was pretty much an even. I think they both took the points, didn't they? Like, it was a split decision. Who would you go, Nick?
The only slight argument I've got against O'Brien is they had something like 330 disposals. They had something like about nearly 50 more than West Coast.
Yeah, right.
And had mid-20 inside 50s, and of his 19 disposals, he had 1 score involvement.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of...
It's tough because if Riley O'Brien was playing in a good team that day, then, they would have won the game and he would have been had a fair thing to say about it.
But I'd be saying that maybe if they were good, he wouldn't be playing that way.
Yeah, maybe too.
Maybe, yeah, like
you don't want to be over reliant on a ruck.
Disposals. Yeah. But I mean, O'Brien, apparently he got full marks on his VCE, which is his ATAR, 99
really?
Point something. Yeah, crazy. He'd be the smartest bloke in the competition, I think.
Yeah, right.
When you think about it. But yeah, mate, I thought I loved it. And I loved
the whole took it. The whole thing, yeah.
It was great.
I wish that he didn't Nick's sometimes too nice for his own good. Like, I wish he just gave him the phone as a full on, like, there's a phone, dickhead. Not like don't worry, mate, here's a new phone.
Slipped it to him.
Yeah, he'd be like, here's a phone. Piss off.
Apparently O'Brien kept apologizing and stuff. So it was obviously a mistake and an error But every single football club, every single ruckman would have the same notes in their phone. Yeah.
Get him around the ground. Nick Nat. Yeah.
Every single – and what do they want him to say? What notes do you want him to say? Like, I love Nick Nat, I'm nervous.
Yeah.
Of course you're going to say
– he will beat me.
Like, if you're playing on Gary Ablett Jr. in his prime, you've still got to find a negative where you think you might be able to get one up on him.
Yeah.
Like, in your head, you got to try and convince yourself of something.
Yeah, I would like to see notes leaked 1 week. Yeah, Nick Nat will beat me. I am worthless. I should give it away. Yeah. So, oh, here we go.
Nervous, my jaw might break when he jumps high. I can't tackle him. He's too strong. Like, what? Of course he's going to have one or two
point
things
four
in there. But
any chance of phone?
Yeah, back to your point, I reckon 50-50.
Yeah, I think
Nick dominated
the
ruck side, and I reckon Riley O'Brien played well around the ground. So I'd say 50-50 and, yeah, loved it.
Yeah, the whole thing was great. And that they didn't go too far in on the, like, West Coast didn't buy in, making everyone think it was still a big, like, motivating factor. Gave him the point after the goal. That was good.
Yeah. But even how O'Brien came out on the Thursday or whatever and explained it on camera.
Yeah.
I saw one of my mates tweet him on the tweet and got liked by bloody hundreds of people. It's like, Riley, whoever's running your PR over this incident probably should have been employed 2 years ago by your actual football club.
Yeah, they've got some issues still, Adelaide. Geez, they're bad. Like, they're legit.
There's a team they're kicking. Try and watch them string together three kicks.
Even like, so there's been talk about, I don't know, it must have just been a passage of play I heard, where Ben Keys, he's gone to Adelaide, former Brisbane player.
Yeah,
they're talking about how good an acquisition he is in a tagger, and I'm like, geez, if you're at a stage where you're like, we got a tagger, you beauty. Like, this is, and bloke who got spat out of a good team. I mean, Ben Keys making the most of what he's got, and good fair play to him, but you can't be getting excited about a tagger.
Well, I've noticed that some of the commentary too this year, like, a great inclusion, or he's great, or he's a star.
Yeah.
The term star and great and champion and all this sort of stuff. I'm
just
like,
thrown around.
Man, let's just drop some of these terms.
Yeah.
Like, there's five champions in the competition, so let's drop the term champion.
Yeah.
And if you're not an Australian, you're not a star either. So let's drop the term star on people who are like coming back from being omitted.
Yeah. He's a star. He played against the Gold Coast reserves last week and had a field day.
Yeah.
That was
anyway,
I did
another
see,
gripe. I said I'm not going to gripe anymore.
There were hints of the I think that was a Mick Malthouse column on the weekend, wasn't it? Don't call Matt Rowell a champion. There's only five champions. But I thought in my head, like, I don't know if anyone's called Matt Rowell a champion. Like, everyone's just
I didn't see that. No,
just
hold
on,
Mick. Fife article.
Or maybe
is that about Fife or
no,
I think
probably,
it was about Fife.
Yeah, he loves having cracks at Nat Fife, Mick Malthouse.
Yeah, no, I reckon it was about Fife.
He said he wasn't a champion.
Yeah. I was listening to Triple M and they had Ross the Boss, who I think is one of the best media personalities going around.
Yeah, he's
Wayne Carey,
he's
Nathan
it.
Brown, or someone like that. And they were saying that Fife's not a champion. He's just simply not. But in 100 games, he probably will be, which is a fair way to look at it. He's not in the category now of what Pendlebury and Selwood and those guys have done. In terms of their career, but in 100 games, you might have another Brownlow, which would make him a three-timer.
Well, mate, he's not many two-timers. He's got two Brownlows. He's got two Brownlows. Like, that's a pretty exclusive
in a
club.
In a shit team.
Well, one of them wasn't. One of them was in the minor premiers.
Yeah. They just needs to get a premiership.
That's all it comes down to, isn't it?
But I mean, I think he's the best player in the competition now, and he has been in the last couple of years. But I reckon if he plays another 100 games, then he's an automatic champion was their point, and I kind of came around to it a little bit because the players that they put in were Franklin, Ablett, Selwood, Pendlebury, and that might be it. There might have been four.
I'm trying to think of who's still playing from around those times. Yeah, well, that's a pretty old club. So that's an age thing, right?
Yeah, no, but I think that's what they're saying. Is you pile up the game. So, like, as well, the actual longevity was a contributing factor.
Yeah.
Longevity was their main contributing factor. Why he's not?
Because he hasn't been around long enough.
Yeah, if he puts 300 games next to his name, then, yeah, there's a lot of those players, not a lot of those players, but, you know, you can name a couple that played 150 games and were good, and then you're like, well, where'd they go? But, I mean, Fife's not in that category. He's obviously going to be a champion. Well, probably think he is.
He's won two Brownlow.
I mean,
he's won two Brownlow medals.
Okay.
And he finished runner-up at least once, maybe twice.
Yeah. Oh, man, I'm just sitting on the fence. I'd rather sell Woods. Would you take Fife's career over any of those four I just mentioned?
No, because everyone wants to win premierships.
You wouldn't, would you?
No. No, because you
want to
play.
So get off my.
Well, but that doesn't mean you're not a champion. It just means like you're not. Yeah, just means you haven't won a flag. Which like
yeah, I'm
different categories, mate.
Just relax. It's a Monday. He's a superstar and he will be a champion. Let's just call that Jets.
We need more clarification around the categories then. Then I'll settle down.
Be a little bit more flexible. He hasn't won a flag and he hasn't played 200 games.
How many games has he played?
I think it was 170. I think they were talking.
Yeah, okay.
I could be making that up, but I thought I was listening to it in the background. So, but yeah, that was their reasoning. And he's obviously the next in line. But they didn't have Dusty in there either.
Well, I wonder what. So it is just games then. If they don't have Dustin Martin in there, then it's just games.
Well, I think they sort of went like, okay, Dusty's won two best and fairest or one best and fairest.
Yeah, but he's won a Brownlow, two Norm Smiths, and two premierships. Yeah. Like, that's a fair.
Yeah, no. Well, mate, Hodgie then.
Yeah, well, Hodgie's a champion.
Yeah, he is. Because he got those 300 games.
Yeah, and he got two Norm Smith medals.
Yeah. I still reckon Basher Hawley.
Basher Hawley was still.
Basher Hawley.
Yep.
And did you hear the news about his mum?
Yeah, his mum is. Yeah. There's a lot of the people
in
who
were. In ICU, too. Yeah. Crazy.
A lot of the people who were complaining about him staying around have gone very quiet.
Oh, mate, he's wished for the best. He's an absolute gentleman, an upper echelon person. So you wish everyone the best that catches this shit. But yeah, even Basher speaking rough today. Did you hear his chat?
No, I haven't got back to it yet. I've seen it. I've got it earmarked.
Oh, have a listen to it. He's like, I don't want you to feel sorry for me. This is just the situation. Just and if this can turn your minds around what coronavirus is, that it, like. Yeah, no, he's very good. Listen to it. It only goes for a couple of minutes.
Yeah, he's very, like, yeah, he's top echelon of people who've come through and made changes and tried to use their profile and their game to make positive changes to their community and the community.
Oh, 100%. And I mean, he says stuff in there about, I don't want to misquote him, but he's got all or whatever. And for mine, that just goes over my head. I don't understand. I wish I did understand it a little bit more. But he's just a man of just morals and values. Yeah. You just sit there going, like, I tweeted, like, everyone should have a little slice of Basher Hawley in them. Like, it's just something that, I'd sit there and go, you're a good person. Like, I wish I could just be a little bit more like you.
There was a slice of that when he chose to stay in Victoria and not go into the hub, where a couple of people were loading up, but the general mood was like, well, Basher Hawley, he's not doing the wrong thing, like, surely. Like, there's no way he's making the wrong decision here because – it's Basher Hawley.
Do you remember when he busted open? Was it a Richmond player? Was it a Carlton player? Did he smash a Carlton player? Yeah, he got suspended like 3 weeks, like, knocked him out cold.
Yeah, and then it was basically like the Pope and the head of the Muslim church.
Yes,
everybody came out as a character witness for him.
Yeah, that's right.
Not Basher.
He ended up getting 3 weeks or 4 weeks. It was a big hit. Yeah. And I was just like, what? No, that can't have been Basher.
I remember they read the room wrong and got in like the AFL's diversity manager who had just been rubbed out like 6 months ago for killing a bloke in the Metro Leagues.
Did he have the Prime Minister? I think he had the Prime Minister.
I think he did have something from the Prime Minister. Or it was like an ex Prime Minister. He had a serious list of character witnesses.
Yeah, no, 100%. Anyway, all the best to Bash.
Yeah, all right. Well, on that, we might as well wrap it up. I did want to do something I forgot about Isaac Rankine at the start of the show. Let's just bookend it with Rankine because why not?
I've got to go.
One of the best things I read, him recalling the three goals that he kicked on AFL.com.au, it was a good piece by Cal Toomey. His quote was, after the first goal, he's like, you spend so much time going into the game thinking about the celebration you'll do, but I can't remember. And I just thought, you spend so much time going into the game thinking about the celebration. Is that right? First game.
I used to spend so much time worrying about not getting a kick on football. not getting a soul kick. Not how I was going to celebrate a goal.
I would love that level of confidence. Be like, Isaac, you're making your debut and your first thoughts is, how's I going to celebrate my first goal?
You can tell he's got some swagger. Tell he's got some swagger.
He's so good. I love him. All right. Thanks for joining us on this happy Monday. See you later, mate.
Good on you, mate.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Talk to you later.